All right, now I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for the month of August, speaking on steps 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, Dennis from Freehold.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dennis Robbins, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be back here again this week. Sorry we had the problems with the bathrooms because I didn't get a chance to use it. So if my eyes start tearing up and I start squeezing between my legs, that means I have to go to the bathroom. The good thing about it is that I've always been pretty much like a camel. I can hold it, you know, and I'll try to hold it as best as I can. It's good to be back up here. I want Mike to know that I really enjoy listening to him, and I want him to know that I identify with, you know, Kathy. Pretty much my sponsor told me the same thing. One day I came and I was complaining to Sonny about my wife. She wasn't getting well fast enough, and, you know, what was the matter with her? And Sonny said, you know, I've talked to your wife. I've been with her. I've observed her. And you're going to AA to be like your wife. I said, boy, that's awful nice for a sponsor to say, you know. But basically, he's absolutely right. She's a good, stable person in my life. And I needed somebody stable because I was unstable for many, many years. And I can be unstable in sobriety. You know, yeah. How much time you have here? You know, they can be those days when we just get locked up in self, and self creates problems. And, you know, I know, because that happens to me sometimes. You know, the greatest thing that I can say today is that looking back from the day I got here up until this moment, my whole life was in chaos. Every day was filled with anxiety. I was angry all the time, angry at everybody. Now it's just once in a while. You know, so that's tremendous improvement. I mean, you know, when you look at it from the standpoint of where I was to where I am today, you know, so what if I get angry every once in a while? So what if I, you know, as long as I don't drink, as long as I don't let that resentment, that anger take me back out there. But I've, through my experience in AA, I've learned that those things that do come back, which is self, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, self-induced drama. That's exactly what it is. That when I bring it back, the old person comes back. The old person filled with anxiety, chaos, confusion comes right back. And I have to talk to another alcoholic. I got to hear somebody, or I have to ask God to remove it. And the craziest thing, or man, not the funniest thing, but he doesn't remove it when I want him to. He removes it when he's ready. You know, like I say, I'm glad to be back up here again. And I don't know if I can go an hour on four steps, but like I told Mike, I don't believe in rambling. But I'm going to try to cover it the way it was taught to me. And how it was taught to me was taught out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in step one, Neil, we admitted we were powerless. And what I had to find out, I had to get that power. I learned about the disease concept in the doctor's opinion. Why I drank the way I did. I had a physical allergy, a physical compulsion, and a mental obsession. I had to come to believe that that power greater than me could restore me to sanity. And as I did that, as I began to clear up, I began to see in the rooms people getting sober. And then I had to make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. And that decision was to be followed by action. Taking a look at me, and in step four, in making a searching and fearless moral inventory, in the 12 and 12, it talked about those basic instincts that we have. And what I found is that all those instincts were in collision with other people's instincts. And I harmed people. You know, one of the things I can remember, when I was drinking, nobody ever talked about inventories. Or nobody ever talked about looking at yourself. Do you know, you know, I've been to high schools and been through training and corporate training, but nobody ever said, take an inventory of yourself, until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and in step five, you know, it talks about walking through that arch, you know, sharing with ourselves, to God, ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs or defects. You know, those things about us that we found out in step four. You know, the whole thing from the time I was coming up, as I look back in retrospect, what things about me triggered me the way I acted? What was it? What was it that caused me to be what I was? And, you know, the alarming thing is, I didn't think anything was wrong with me, except that I drank. That's what, you know, frightens me, because all my life I'm out there, I'm living in delusional thoughts. Totally delusional. Until I come in here and through this incredible book here, and through a great sponsor who always told me, look at yourself. I remember I wasn't sober maybe 45 days, maybe 60 days, and I was complaining. I was a chronic complainer, you know, and my sponsor told me something I never forgot. He said, the problem starts and ends with you. Now, that went right over my head. Right over my head, because I told him, I said, no, you don't understand. And Sonny was the type of person who would say nothing. He would just stand there and look at you and let you rant, go through what you had to go through. Because now I understand what he meant by the problem starts and ends with you. That fourth step, and then sharing it with him in the fifth step, I come to find out that it all starts with me. Nobody can make me feel. You know, I was a chronic blamer. I don't know if anybody identifies with that, but I was a chronic blamer. You know, it was... And what I found out too, the ego will do things to address itself, and when something's wrong, it'll point fingers away from itself. And that's pretty much the way I was my whole life. Not just drinking, that was when I was born. You know, I was that way from the time I first started thinking. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted. And you know, all this is, I don't know if all of this is fear-based, probably is, because I was afraid that something was going to happen the way I wanted to, etc. And that's just the way it was. But in step five, to admit these things to my sponsor, you know, then after going home and doing the proposal, five proposals, you know, it says in that prayer, God, may we get to know you better, or thank God that we know you better. And then we walk through a new arch of freedom. Because all that crap, all that stuff that I never knew about is now gone. It's now gone at that point. And it brings us... Now, at that point, if I really haven't hedged on anything, if I've dotted all the T's and... No, if I dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and got everything out, then I'm ready for step six. Being entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character that I found. Now, you know, I have a problem. I'm never entirely ready. You know, there's some times when, to be honest with you, the defects that I really want God to take away right away are those defects that can cause me to pick up a drink. Resentment, anger, you know, things that can really churn and get me so insane and crazy that I think the only solution is to pick up a drink. Those are things I really want God to get rid of right away. But you know, one of the things that I got to really look at is the subtler defects of character. The subtle ones, you know, like envy, you know, and jealousy, you know, and, you know, those things about me that just sneak through the back door. You know what I mean? They just come right through the back door and they got me and I'm acting out because of it. You know, to give you an example, I was, I was sober a few years, and I had been through the steps, because I got right into service right away. My sponsor took me right through the steps and got me active in service immediately. And, you know, all of a sudden, I woke up one day. You know how we wake up. You know, we wake up and only see what we want to see. And I started looking around. I said, wait a minute, I'm sober. how come I'm not getting promoted? That's the first thing came to my mind. How come I'm not getting promoted? I said, wait a minute. You know, there's something wrong here. Now, right away, jealousy started kicking in because I saw guys come into my data center, stay there for a few months, and boom, they got promoted and went somewhere else. It was like they were warehousing promotions in my center. And I'm watching them come in and get promoted, and I'm sitting there saying, well, damn, you know, I'm a college graduate. I'm sober, and you know, and damn, you know, how come? And I got caught up, and I went to my sponsor about it, and he said, well, you have a real short memory, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know, if you just remember, just a couple of years ago, they're about to fire your butt. They're about to fire you. It was only through grace that your job was saved, because you didn't know that the help was asked for you. And here you are complaining. You should be happy you even have a job. But you know, as an alcoholic, I forgot that. You know, what I want to see is what I want to see when I want to see it. And you're supposed to be doing it for me now, because don't you know who I am? Well, this got hold of me like you would never believe. And my sponsor very, very quietly and suggestively said, it'll happen when it's supposed to happen. Not before and not after. It will happen when it's supposed to happen. And of course, you know, he don't know what he's talking about. You know, and he was absolutely right. That everything happens the way it's supposed to happen, when it's supposed to happen. And it's the way I view it. And it took me a long time in AA to get hold of that concept. It took me a long time. You know, we look at those things and we become entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, when I'm in pain, I want them gone. All right, God, come and get it right now. I'm stuck here, you know what I mean? And he just doesn't do it like that for me. He doesn't do it like that for me. Let's me stop in it for a little bit, you know what I mean? But what I do know is that if I ask him in step seven, and the seventh step prayer is, my creator, I'm not willing that you should have all of me, both the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that prevents my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go off from here to do your bidding. Now, I say that earnestly. But then right after I say it, I get back in the way again. Yeah. Now, you see, I'm going to be for real up here, see. I'm not going to tell you that I just got it like that, because I don't. You know, now, one of the things that I do know is that God has removed it. But when he removes something, there's a vacuum left. Now, if I put me back in the vacuum, then the problem is right still there. But if I allow my change in my behavior to take place, you know, I have a thing here, and I'm going to read from it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I can memorize everything, because I can't. If I've been dishonest, well then, I need to be honest. If I've been frightened about something, then I need to do the opposite of being frightened. I need to summon courage. If I was inconsiderate to somebody, and I know today when I'm right and when I'm wrong, I can't jive myself, I know the truth today. I have to be considerate. If I replace bad with bad, then bad is going to continue to happen. And there's a guy I heard out in California, I don't know if my sponsor even kind of said it, you know, you can't think your way into right living. You have to live your way into right thinking. If my thinking is screwed up, then I'm going to act screwed up. If my thinking is right, then if I'm living right, then my thinking is going to be right. Yeah. That didn't make sense to me for a long time in AA. It took me a long time to get a lot of these concepts. It took me a long time. But, you know, I have them some days, and some days I just don't get it. And that's why I need you. That's where I need you. That's where I need guys I sponsor. That's where I need my sponsor. That's where I need people in Alcoholics Anonymous to tell me, you're off, Dennis. And I've learned today that it's all right for me to be off. You know, going back to Mike had me sitting there laughing. You know, I'm sober almost 9 years, and gee whiz, I'm not supposed to feel this way. Well, let me tell you about me. Oh, God, I was delusional in AA for a long time. You know, and I remember studying the big book with my sponsor. I damn near memorized the 12 and 12. I read every AA lit you can get your hands on. You name it, I read it. And then I started reading books that the Oxford group read. You know, Sermon on the Mount, Emmett Fox's series. And then I would go to my sponsor's house. I would say, man, give me that book on yoga. Give me that book on Zen. And I read the Bible all the way through. Genesis to Revelations, and in a new chapter from Matthew to Revelation, I studied it. Now, what I was going to do is I was going to, through knowledge, I was going to bring all this power in me, see? And then I was going to walk around like on tulips, you see? I was going to be rendered white as snow, see? Then maybe a halo might come around my head. And this is what I thought. See, I thought I could educate myself into this thing here. And what I found out is that was good knowledge. But serenity is a gift. It's a gift. Now, if it wasn't a gift, then I'd be serene all the time. And I'd turn on the switch, serenity switch. Now, let me give you another prime example of serenity. Now, if God came to me right now and said to me, he said, look, I'm going to give you serenity, but I'm going to give you a little meter. And now you can tune it any way you want. Now, you really have enough, but here's a dial that you can tune it as to how you like it. Well, I would probably break the dial. See, I'd want it, if serenity is good here, let me see how much better it is if I move it 3/4 of the distance. And if I get there, I'm not satisfied. I'm going to move it all the way around, and I'm going to break the knob. You see, that's the kind of person I am. That's the kind of person I am. And, you know, when I'm prideful, I need to look for humility. You know, when I'm lustful, I need to go see if I can help somebody. You know, Big Book tells me that. In a chapter on inventory on sex. And they tell me when I'm being overwhelmed by lust and sex, I need to go work with somebody. Get my mind off of that kind of stuff, you know. And when I'm impatient, I need to find patience. When I'm intolerant, I need to find tolerance. I need to replace those things I'm asking God to take away by action. By action. Because he'll take it away if I ask him. I know he will. I'm a big believer in prayer. My God, I'm here as a result of prayer. I can tell you right now, I'm here as a result of prayer. I know it works. But he won't do for me what I can't do for myself. You know, and if I'm willing to replace that negative behavior with positive behavior, or that negative thought with a positive action, I can generally find my way out of that morass or that mud hole that I'm in a lot quicker. I had recently, about a year ago, I got moved from one department to another. I was a systems engineer. I got moved from maintaining a whole bunch to a whole new group. And what happened was, my director, old director, used to entitle me to work from home 2 days a week. And he used to say, well, only come in if you need to. And I used to tell my wife, my God, I could work on this job till I'm 90. Because I don't have to go to New York every day. I can work from home on my computer. And I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe it. I was that way for 3 years. My wife used to say, man, you should pray every day because you got it made. I ain't never seen anybody this good. You know what I mean? You know, and I had a good team that worked for me. That whenever there was a problem, I didn't have to run to New York. I could just call them and tell them what to do, and they would get it all straightened out. I had it made. In December of 2000, I was transferred to another director. And he was like a micromanager. Now, I went from an empowering manager, director, to let you do what you want to do. Long as the numbers are right, long as everything was good, he didn't care if you didn't show up. Just long as he didn't hear anything. And I made it so that no calls went to him. No calls went to him. I used to tell him, directors, call me. Scream at me, but don't call him. Because I don't want to blow this sweet thing I got here. So I go to a new director. He's a decent guy. But he was a micromanager. So right away he says, okay, because you have more responsibilities, there's no more working from home. Oh, right away, resentment. Right away. I'm sober 17 years. So 16 years, right away, instant resentment. I mean, is he for real or what? Now, I was training this guy. I've been in the company longer than him. When all these things started coming up, I've been in the company longer than him. I know more than he knows. Who does he think he's talking to? All of this. And let me tell you something about hanging on to stuff. I hung on to that for months. I'm very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do prison work. I do prison works on Fridays and Tuesdays. I go to detoxes. I'm very active in this program. The only time I had any semblance of peace is when I was working with another alcoholic. But as soon as I walk out of that institution, anger would hit me right away. Because he wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. And you know, the bottom line is, that had grabbed me so much, man, that it started making me sick. You know, because I was so caught up in self and him not satisfying me that I literally went out of my mind right here in AA because he wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. And you know what? He was just as obstinate as I was. You know, because then he would get me conference calls early in the morning and late at night, and there would be problems, and he would call me from Pennsylvania, are you going up there to check it, and all that. And man, I was just stewing. And my wife would say to me, you letting that man drive you crazy. And no, he wasn't driving me crazy. I was driving me crazy based on the knowledge that he wasn't doing what I wanted him to do for me. And here's the great part. I'm not on step 9 yet, but when I did retire in April, I had to go to him for when you leave, you got to go through exit interview and let you know your benefits and all that. And we sat up and talked. You know, that man was a gentleman. He was a real gentleman. You know, I knew Dennis for almost 20 years. He was Dennis like me, you know. And you know, he was a real gentleman. I said to myself, I said, you know, there's something wrong with me because there was nothing wrong with him. He just wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. And all I want you to know is that can happen to me anytime that I let self get back in and I only see the things from the way I want to see it, not the way it's supposed to be seen. You know, it tells us in the biggest of all big, if he's my boss, I'm supposed to do what he tells me to do. He's paying me, or the company's paying me to do it. You know, but it's that self-inflicted, that self-will. It's that basic nature that I have that just rebels against people who don't do it the way I want them to do it. You know, and all I did was make myself sick. He didn't make me sick. I made myself sick. But thank God, somewhere along the line, through enough... And on top of this, now I'm praying for this guy. Page 551, I'm praying for him constantly. But it wasn't his problem. It was mine. But thank God I'm able to see that today. I'm able to see that today. You know, so God takes. Takes it away, but we have to replace it with positive action, positive behavior. And if we're living right, our thinking will become right again. You know, self-will, like I read in the big book and you heard on Joe and Charlie's tapes, self-will cannot cure self-will. Only one that can cure self-will is God. And I have to avail myself to him. And if I'm in the way with that anger, and if I'm in the way with that resentment, if I'm in the way with, don't you know who I am, the relief is not going to come until I give that up. And sometimes I like to hold on to it because it makes me feel good. I don't know if you identify with that, but sometimes that anger, you know, it's familiar. It's something that I used to have years and years ago, so it's kind of like a familiar feeling. But when it gets to hurt too bad, I want it gone right away. And it doesn't work like that for me all the time. It comes and goes when I take the positive action. And God does the removing in His time when He wants to. And He'll enable me to see the truth of the matter when I right myself with Him. So, in step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. And my God, I harmed a lot of people. Majority of them I got off my resentment list. A lot of them I got off my sexual behavior list. I don't remember ever getting any of them off my fear list. I don't believe anybody had harmed me or made me fear them to that degree. But we make a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. And you know, one of the things that I found not only in step 8, but in step 6, you know, if I was unable to summon that from God to be entirely ready, I can ask Him to help me to be willing to be ready. I really believe that just to pray for willingness is a great thing. If I can't do it at all, just ask Him for willingness. You know, help me to be willing to be willing to be willing to let go of whatever it is. Yeah, but sometimes, I have to be honest with you, I'm not capable. But as long as I get the willingness, the following actions will start to begin to happen. You know, I'll begin to worm my way out of that. You know, and I'm really thankful for these steps. So like I say, my list was very, very long. And I didn't have any problem with anybody on my list. I was on it. My father was on it. IRS was on it. My former landlord. Gee, was a lot of people. It was a long list of a lot of people that I had harmed. And, you know, when you're at the step, you can look back and you know what you've done. When you're at this step, you know the truth about your behavior. You know. You can't bull-jive yourself. You know, one of the things I do, one of the things that I'm very thankful for is I have a sponsor who is straight up, who will flat out tell you, this is what you do, here's how you do it, and that's it, if you want to get well. See, one of the things that I want to do is I want to get well. I want to get better. You know, like I told you, the mental obsession was taken from me through the grace of God that I've come to understand here. But I was left with Dennis. I was left with a sick Dennis. And I just wanted to get well. There was a lot of pain when I got here. My God, it was a lot. And the only thing I would ask my sponsor is, what's next? God damn, what? Step 2, when we doing 3? You know, what we're 3? Let's do 4. I mean, that I just wanted to get better. So when it came to doing the steps, I didn't hesitate. You know, and he told me just what to do in step 8. And you know, all that step really is me to make a list of those persons that harm. And like I said, I got that off my resentment list. And I got off my sexual behavior list. A lot of people. That step doesn't mean that I have to do it right now. That step only means that I have to be willing to do it when the occasion fits itself. And I can tell you now, for me, and I can't talk for anybody else here, that every amends in the 9th step, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. It's been my experience that I didn't have to go out and look for people to make amends. I can't describe it, but it just seemed that the right situation always presented itself for me. Now, of course, you know, those amends, when we first come in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when we first, you know, get sober, right away we want to tell everybody, we're sorry. And I did the same things. You know, I went right to my mother and father, oh, I'm sober now. And, you know, and they looked at me and kind of looked, and that's what they did. They looked. I went to my wife and told her I was sober, and she said, "That's nice, but you're not staying here." You know, that's the way it was with me in the beginning, you know. But you know, I remember my sponsor telling me, he said, "You know, the greatest amends that you can make to anybody right now, if you're new, is don't drink." He said, "Man, you will make so many people happy you won't believe it. The fact that you're not drinking will make a lot of people happy." And I held on to that. And then I realized why this step is step 9. I realized why the amends process really takes place in step 9. Because I'm able to see me. I'm able to see my part in every situation. You know, when you get to this step, it's a step that kind of takes you away from remorse and guilt. It clears up all of that, you know. And I was listening to Joe and Charlie, and you know, and one of the things they say really, really struck me. I mean, really great. It says the first three steps, step 1, 2, and 3, we take care of the spiritual. 4, 5, 6, and 7, we take care of the mind, the mental. And steps 8 and 9, we take care of physical relationships. We right ourselves in all three dimensions of this program, the spiritual, the mental, and the physical. And in steps 8 and 9, and steps 9, like I said, I'm going to tell you about some of those amends because they were very critical in my life, and I'll tell you how they came about. How situations present themselves, and I didn't have to go out looking. I was sober a little bit over 2 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my wife's mother called me, and my ex-wife called me, and she told me that her nephew had passed away. And I knew him. I knew him ever since he was a little baby. And at that point, I was talking to her, and I talked to her mother. And I remember her mother telling me, you know, I remember telling her I had to get right with myself. And, you know, the cause of the breakup of that marriage was not Betty's fault, it was my fault. Because I'm able through these steps to take a look at my behavior and see the truth in the real matter. And I remember her telling me, "You almost caused my daughter a nervous breakdown. I hope and pray to God I never hurt nobody like that ever again." You know, see, I didn't think I was hurting nobody when I was out there drinking. I didn't think I was bothering anybody. You know, as long as I was drinking, well, how could it affect you? Well, I began to see how it could affect you. You don't know where I am. Maybe you're worried. You know, a lot of things. You know, I mean, you know, I'm married to you. You're supposed to be here. There's supposed to be companionship. There's supposed to be a relationship here. There's supposed to be a binding, loving, God-centered relationship here. And yet, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me being out there in the streets. Nothing. You know, so I remember my mother telling me, even though I had married somebody else, she said, "You know, you're welcome back into our home, back up in Rome, New York, and I'd like to see you again." I owe that all to Alcoholics Anonymous. Being truthful, being upfront, expressing my problem in the matter, what I caused, and she invited me back to Rome to visit them, and that's something when you've done that damage, and yet they say, "You come, please come back up and visit us." I owe that all to Alcoholics Anonymous and the healing God that I've come to find here that heals everything. My present wife, I put her through 10 years of living hell. And I remember when I came back in, she was the one who told me, "Well, I don't care about you being an AA, you got to go back." But after 11 and a half months, she came back in my life. I had nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing to do with it. I didn't drink. I went to meetings. I started working with other alcoholics. And I remember my sponsor said, "You're not here to get your wife back. You're here to get sober. If your wife comes back, fine. If not, you just move on." Well, I did what he said. And 11 and a half months, she came back. And then I began to make amends to her. You know, how I mistreated her. It was wrong for me to never be home. You know, I'm sorry, don't get it. I have to express the wrong that I've done in the matter. And You know, she didn't say anything. She just looked at me. But my behavior over the years from that point on is the amends, because I haven't left her. I haven't gone out and stayed days and weeks at a time. There's food now in the house. The mortgage is getting paid. So my behavior's changed. So the amends process is taking place. With my 25-year-old son, he was maybe 4 years old when I was going crazy. And probably many a night he saw his mother sitting there crying. And I remember when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to say to my sponsor, well, when is she going to get better? Well, the fact of the matter is, if my father had treated my mother the way I treated his mother, I wouldn't like me either. So my sponsor said, you have to allow him. You have to allow him to get better. But I made amends to him. And I told him, I said, you know, it was wrong for me to leave you. Not to be at the baseball game. Even one time he was playing little league ball and the ball hit him in the eye and cracked his eye bone, I wasn't there. The coaches had to hold him steady until I got back. I wasn't even there for my boy, and I had to take him to he had to get an operation on his eye. He could see good today. They mended the socket and they got his eye straightened out, but I wasn't there. See, I got to remember that. So it's going to take a long time for him to heal, maybe, you know. But today he's 25, and today we're pretty good friends. You know, and with IRS, I was sober about a year and a half in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just bought me a brand new 1985 Cavalier. And the IRS sent me this letter. Come down, we want to see you. You know, so I said, well, I'm sober. And I told Sonny, I'm going to go on down there. I went over there to Tilly Street in Brooklyn. And I walked in there, and the lady said, you haven't paid any income tax in 5 years. And she started rambling and going crazy on me. And she said, we're going to put a lien against you, and you're not going to get it. I got up and ran out of there. Got up and ran out of the place. Woman scared me half to death. I called my sponsor, and he said one thing to me. He said, give it to God. He said, give it to God. I said, man, I'm about ready to go to jail. He told me I'd give it to God. What he meant was, change your behavior. Get honest. So I went down to church. 100 Church Avenue, right down by the Trade Center. That's where another IRS building was. And I went it. I didn't go back to Tilly Street. They might have had cops standing there waiting. So the next day I went down to 100 Church Street, and I went in there. And the lady said to me, I said, you know, they told me over there they're going to lean me and all. She said, look, what was the problem? I said, look, I had a problem drinking. I had a problem with drugs. I know I haven't paid any income tax in 5 years. Maybe I could work out something. She said, we'll accept your amends, but you got to pay. And I said, okay. Now, this is on tape, but I'm retired now, so it won't make no difference. When I was working for the phone company, I was a schemer. You know, alcohol is scheme. Does anybody identify with that? In order for me to have more money in my pocket, I had a friend that worked in payroll. And I used to tell her, every payday put me down for 19 dependents. So I get my whole check. Well, when you do that over 5 years, you owe the government a lot of money. You better believe you owe them a lot of money. And my God, when you come out of the fog, it'll put you back in the fog. You know, thank God I had a sponsor. Thank God I had a sponsor who said to me, just don't worry about it. Just make an arrangement. So I made arrangements with this lady. $200 a month on a $13,000 debt. $13,300 to be exact. $200 a month, $40 went to principal, $160 went to interest. And I told Sam, I'll be paying this for 50 years. And he said, so what? You're correcting a problem. Well, I would pay it every month. And every time I would file for legitimate income tax, I would be getting money back. But no, they snatched it all. They got theirs off the top. You understand? I got nothing. So for about 6 years, I lived like this. From 4 years. From 84 to 88. Finally, it was down to about $8,000-something. And my wife had transferred, she was getting ready to transfer down to the Freehold area. She worked for American General now, but they're down in the area now. And we couldn't get a house because I had to lean on me. So my wife went in a woman who wouldn't have anything else ever to do with me in life, went in a 401k and gave me the money to pay off the lien. And I've been debt-free since then. All because I don't drink, I go to meetings, and I believe in working with other alcoholics. Incredible things have happened in my life. Another one on my harm list was my landlord. Well, I don't know about you, but I didn't believe in paying rent when I was drinking. You know, and what happened was, I guess there were times when, you know how when they call you down to court, I used to go there and act like I was a lawyer. You know, go in there and talk about, well, this didn't happen, that didn't, and what I wound up doing was paying the rent that I owed, plus the court fee, plus the interest. So even though I was grandstanding, it was costing me more money, you see. And I remember this collector called me to work, and he would scream on the phone, "You, Mr. Robbins, you owe us this money. You're going to give it to us." And all that. So I said, well, I started screaming back at him. And we went at it. And finally, my sponsor said, straighten it out. And they made an arrangement for a $5,000 debt, $100 a month for 5 years. And I paid them. You know, when you get real here, when you get truthful, you ain't got nothing else to worry about. I'm going to tell you, you have nothing else to worry about. You know, when my sponsor told me, he said, you were home and you didn't have to suffer anymore, he was right. I haven't puked. I haven't pissed on myself. And I know I am right now. For a whole lot of drink, I know where I was. The 12 steps, you put these in your life, you become a whole new person. He used to always tell me, you got it made, you just don't know it. You got it made. You just don't know it. So through the experiences over the years, the experience that I had to endure with self, the experience I had to do with the wreckage of the past of self, I'm able to write myself today to everybody. I don't have to look over my shoulder to nobody. And before, I used to have to duck around corners. I had to duck around. All my credit card debt, I was able to pay them off methodically. It was big. See, I was one of them alcoholics. You know, when I went to the mailbox, you know, I lived in a tall high rise, and our mailboxes were in like a room. And there was a big garbage can there. So I used to get the mail out the box, and I used to just rip it up. Arrogance of an alcoholic, the self-will of an alcoholic. It's just totally incredible. But I was able to straighten that out. I had to make amends to my father, and I didn't like him. And my sponsor told me, he said, you can't love God and hate your father at the same time, you hypocrite. Well, he got my attention. So now I would pray for him, and I would pray for the willingness. And I would pray that resentment prayer in the book, that he's a sick person, that what he did to me and all this other crap. And it's through a series of events, and I'm going to tell you about them. My sponsor was speaking out in Ohio at a Central Ohio Roundup. And on the program with him was Don P. from Colorado. I knew Don from when I was up at World Services on the Corrections Committee. He was on at the same time I was. He rotated off before I did, but tremendous man. And he talked about his father, and I identified, and his relationship with his father today. I came back to New York, and a friend of mine, Warren, who does Bedford Hills Prison for Women, was on vacation. He said, "Dennis, could you take the commitment for me?" I said, "Wonderful," because I got a woman I had sponsored in New York, had a sponsee who was sober about a year and a half, and she wanted her to go and speak. So I called Warren, got the name put in. We went up to Bedford Hills Prison for Women up in New York. And in the cafeteria, there must have been about 40 or 50 women in there. And when this woman started telling her story, you could have heard a pin drop. That story was so deep, it almost brought it was bringing tears to my eyes. On how she grew up in a family where it was normal for cousins and uncles to get into bed with her. She thought that was normal. The drugs and alcohol throughout the family. I mean, she thought that growing up in that was normal. And when she talked about how she was brought up and talked about her ism and her recovery today, when I got out of there, I wanted to go home and kiss my father. Literally kiss him. Primarily because, you know, when you listen to somebody else, your life wasn't really too bad after all. And then after a while, after a period of time, like I shared with you last week, I was able to see my part in my situation with my father. That through delusional thinking, I only saw it my way. I was so locked up in it, I was locked up in it for 40-some years. But not quite 40, 30-something years. And my sponsor would tell me over and over again, until you can forgive him wholeheartedly, you're not going to be right. So one of the essence in my message is, I had to learn to forgive. And the biggest person I had to forgive was me for all my past behaviors. I have to render the thought today that I've been forgiven. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sober right now. I'd be drinking right now if I had. So I had to get my whole concept of God has to be loving God. From what I was, and see, only I know my story, see. I knew what I was. And I'm not like that today. It had to be a loving God to give me another chance at life, or a new chance at life. Not another chance, a new chance at life. Because that's the way I see it today. So all those things, all those harmless, I've been through them. Another one was my godmother's daughter. I was 15 years old, and my godmother passed away. She was almost like my mother. She was West Indian. I loved her. And she loved her some Dennis, boy. And I mean, she spoiled me. And when she died, I remember, I felt, she'd known me since I was 6 months old. Kind of took care of me since I was 6 months old. And at the funeral, I was relegated to the back. You know, the back pew. And when the family got into the long cars and all that, I had to ride with them. With my parents or with my godbrother and all of them. And I felt like I was closer to her than her own sons and daughters. But see, that's what I felt. And that was based on self. You know, don't you know who I am? She loved me more than you did, than she loved you. No, that wasn't the fact. The fact that I was angry because I was not treated the way I was wanted to be treated. So one day she was in the hospital, and I went up to see her. And she said, "You know, it was really good to see you again." And I said, "You know, it was really good to see you too, Ivy." You know, and because for a long time I wouldn't talk to her. Wouldn't have nothing else to do with her. You know, when you've known somebody for a long time and you just shut them off, you hurt them. You know, I had that ability, boy, to put a shade on you quick. And that's not good behavior, because that hurts people, especially if they like you. Especially if they like you. And I was able to make amends to her, you know, able to be there. And I became a different person. I don't act out on that behavior again. Now, I was going down to Avenue one. I had taken a speaker down to Avenue. And I was complaining about my older boy. You know, he was, you know, messing up in school. Of course, he's in college now, getting ready to graduate. You know, God takes care of everything. If I just get out the way. And I remember this guy saying to me, "Well, did you make amends to your son?" I said, "Yeah, I did." He said, "Well, I bet your son don't think so if you act in the same way." You know, still hollering at him. Still running him down, you know, "You should do this." Still criticizing him, still putting him down. You know, pretty much like you do when you're drunk. See, as far as my son was concerned, I might have still been drinking. My behavior hadn't changed. And he caught my attention. He said, "You know, amends is not only just saying you were wrong for not being there for him and you were wrong for hitting him and whatever have you. You got to change that behavior towards him. That's how the amends process really works. I really have to change my behavior towards those that are harmed." Like I said today, I'm not looking over my shoulder about nothing. Thank God for that. All because of these steps. There's one thing I want to recite. I don't quote. I do quote one thing, but there's a prayer here in step 9. "So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love." And I need to do that a lot more, because I'm more impatient with people close to me. I'm less tolerant with people that are close to me than I am with you people. And that's something that I have to address. That's something I have to ask God to help me with. You know, and right after step 9, we have the promises. And I'm not going to quote them. I'm going to read them. "If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through." That promise has come true in my life. "We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Every day I was sad. Every day I had anxiety. Every day I had chaos in my life. I find happiness today, most days. I can smile, I can laugh. And in some days when I couldn't smile, I couldn't laugh. So I've made tremendous progress. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Hope God never lets me forget that hell that I came from. I don't ever want to forget it. I don't ever want to forget it. You know, because that's where I was. A self-induced hell. We will comprehend the truth. We will comprehend the word serenity. And we will know peace." I never told nobody this. I maybe told my sponsor. In 1990, before I went out to Seattle at the convention, I was given a loving invitation to speak out there at one of the workshops. I was walking around in my living room. I'm sorry, in my dining room. And I went in my den. And then all of a sudden, I felt all right. Now, I can't tell you what all right is. But I said to myself, "Wait a minute, I'm not crazy anymore." And it was for a fleeting moment. For a fleeting moment. And I said, "Oh my God, this is what they're talking about. Boy, I want to be like this all the time. 24/7. But I don't have the gauge." And the one thing I do know is that when I recognize it, I lost it. I lost it. It went just as fast as it came. It lasted for a few minutes, and I understand now. I understand. And I understand my sponsor when he says, "You can get there, and you don't ever have to come back down again. You can stay. Only one who can bring you down is you." I believe that. I believe because I've seen it. A lot of things have happened in my life. Too much for me to share in the next 2 minutes. But incredible things have happened in my life that I know there's a power greater than me. There's no doubt in my mind about it. No doubt in my mind about it. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others. That's my service promise. That's my service promise. That no matter how far down I've gone, my experience maybe can help somebody else. I'll understand him. Because I used to tell guys I sponsor, if I haven't done it, I thought about it. So I'll identify. That feelingness of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellow. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude upon life will change. It has. Fear of people of an economic insecurity will leave us. Well, that happened when I retired, and they gave me my severance. I was able to wipe everybody out. So it did happen, though. It did happen. And our whole attitude, self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude, I look upon life, will change. Fair people, and it comes to good. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I guess the greatest thing here is we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And he's doing that for me every day. God bless you.